Familiar voice to those in the London region. She's on with Andy Udman every week, as well as being on with us every couple of weeks. Nutritional consultant Pam Colleen, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am well. We go from that awful story to yesterday, and it prompted a big discussion on depression, and it prompted a big discussion on addiction. And you've written a book about this, though. You've written a book on this and the links between mood and food.
That's right. And one of the biggest links that I make in my book, which is called Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, is this connection between low-fat diets and mood disorders. And by low-fat diet, that means a diet low in animal fat. That's historically what that term has meant for many, many years. And unfortunately, Robin Williams was on a low-fat diet. He went on a low-fat diet after he had had heart surgery, which is unfortunately a lot of what people do today after they've been diagnosed with some sort of health condition like heart disease. And without the animal fat in the diet, unfortunately, this actually starves the brain and can cause all sorts of mood issues from chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And Tom, I'm not exaggerating this story because I can tell you on a daily basis the type of conversations I have with chronically ill people who have these conditions, and without any doubt, in every case, they've all been on a low-fat diet, and this could be your standard American diet, the diet promoted by Health Canada, for example. It can be vegetarian, vegan diets. These are all diets that are low in animal fat, and a vegan diet is the worst-case scenario, of course, because there is no animal fat in that diet. So, unfortunately, vegans are among the sickest clients that I have.
What's interesting as well, because someone yesterday, and this has been, and I wonder, there has been a connection between those who have heart surgery and depression. Someone noted, you know, people who have heart surgery often are at greater risk for depression. It's like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, fascinating. Because they're on a low-fat diet.
That's it. That may be it. Where you know, the connection is like, well, you have to change your diet. You have to do this. But again, when we look at the damage that dietary fat, we have said there is no problem with dietary fat and saturated fat and heart disease. That connection has been broken. Sadly, for many people, it's too late.
It's hard to reverse the damage done by a low-fat diet. It takes a lot of work to undo the damage that this low-fat diet has done to us. And it's really something that has crept into society just really since, say, post-World War II. And if you look before World War II, you didn't see this epidemic of mood disorders in society. We're seeing it now, and it completely coincides with this dramatic, irrational, illogical change in our diets since post-World War II.
I had a listener yesterday when we were talking about this, and we talked about mental health in general, and she said her, and I know this is, again, totally anecdotal, but for her, her life changed when she gave up sugar. That when she gave up sugar, she said, my depression ended when I gave up sugar.
Yeah.
You're an advocate of a low, greatly decreased amount of sugar, added sugars to the diet. I mean, you know, you got to control your sugar because, unfortunately, you know, blood sugar is better regulated through fats, and that blood and that sugar, you know, and lends itself to spiking and then crashing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's unfortunate that we have those terms around it only because it's like, oh, yeah, we probably, you know, fat doesn't make us fat. Sugar makes us fat. So, you know, fat does so much to regulate our hormonal system. Fat does so much to regulate our blood sugar. But we demonized fat and we ignored that the added simple sugars and starches in our diets did so much damage. But getting back to her, she said, and I think it was Georgia. Georgia said, you know what? Once I eliminated sugar from my diet, I found I was so much happier. I found my depression had gone. I found my, you know, do you find that typically among your clients that and we've heard this before, that the brain fog is one indication where you may have too much sugar?
Right, because it's a drug, Tom. And the brain fog can be a residual sort of effect in terms of the withdrawal from the drug, right? So it can be from coffee that you might have consumed the day before or lots of sugar you may have consumed the day before. Sugar is a drug. It is a stimulant. Make no mistake. And unfortunately, Robin Williams used a lot of stimulants. He had a lot of years where he was using cocaine. And when you're using a stimulant, the analogy I like to use is that you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So you can get a synthetic sense of energy from using sugar, caffeine, crack, cocaine, whatever your stimulant of choice might be. But essentially what people are doing when they turn towards a stimulant is they're self-medicating. They're trying to give themselves a sense of energy when they really don't have any energy. But the trouble with using a stimulant is that as you might get some synthetic energy from using a stimulant, it will rob you from energy at the same time. So you have to keep going back to it in order to have that sense of, you know, being alive. And over time, what it does is, of course, if you look at the adrenal glands in the body and you're pushing and pushing and pushing on the adrenal glands with anything stimulating, and that can be the drugs I just mentioned, it can be over-exercise, other systems are going to shut down. So you have the analogy in the body of having a gas pedal and a brake pedal, right? And when you're pushing and pushing and pushing on the gas pedal, you know, the brake pedal has to compensate at some point. So the brake, you know, the brakes get turned on, you know, to shut down all of that juice, so to speak, right? And that's what happens. So in the simplistically, when I talk to my clients, they all think they have a thyroid problem, for example. And I say, it's not a thyroid problem. It's an adrenal problem. You're pushing too hard on the adrenal glands. And you've got to learn, and this takes a lot of work, Tom, you've got to learn how to stop stimulating those adrenal glands so that they can rest and heal and cause homeostasis or balance in the body instead of all this chaos.
All right, before we go to break, I want to ask you a question in terms of when I go back to my high school biology, and I think it's called the Krebs cycle, mm-hmm. and we look at how each cell through glycogen and then ATP, adenosine triphosphate, mm-hmm. how our cells function. We're all a collection of trillions of cells, and the basic form of energy is through glycogen, which is derived from glucose. But isn't so why, if my body runs on glycogen and to power ATP, why is there an other source other than glucose? Can I get it from somewhere? I know I can metabolize proteins and is it like that's the confusing part.
Keep in mind that fat and protein increase blood sugar as well, right? It just doesn't do it so dramatically as if you eat lots and lots of carbs. And that's what you want, is you want to basically balance your blood sugar, but you just don't want to spike it. You don't want to create huge amounts of highs and lows. That's where you're going to run into trouble. So animal fat and animal protein will gently raise your blood sugar, but not spike it. And that's not destabilizing. That's what's normal for the human body.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, talking to us this morning about mood and food. A connection that, you know, we get satisfaction oftentimes when we're grieving. We get satisfaction when we're hungry. We also have an emotional response as well. So we'll talk to Pam a little bit more about mood and food when we come back. You're listening to News Talk 1290 CJBK and News Talk 610 CKTB. 610 CKTB. Pam Colleen joins us on the program. She's a nutritional consultant. London, you hear her with Andy Oudman on a regular basis like we do down here in Niagara. And Pam, when people think about food, when people begin to think about diet and being healthy, oftentimes, and this is a point you make repeatedly, that we think about what's going on for our waistlines and we treat that as far more important as to what's going on in our brain. Mm-hmm. Like this is the most important organ that we have to feed is our brain. Oftentimes we overlook it and we go down to like, well, I want to lose 10 pounds. Okay, great. You want to lose 10 pounds. But how are you going to do it? And by starving yourself, you're starving your brain.
Yeah, and a lot of people make the mistake, Tom, of actually separating the brain from the rest of the body. For example, when people are feeling depressed or anxious or whatever the case may be, even ADD, they get chemicals. You know, they're swallowing pills that are essentially chemicals. And the pills go into the stomach, and that affects the brain. So they associate, you know, swallowing pills with improved mood. But society, for the most part, is ignoring the same connection with food, that when you swallow food, it goes down into your stomach and it affects your brain. It shouldn't be that we turn so often to using man-made chemicals in order to solve this problem. You know, I always tell people depression is not a Prozac deficiency. ADD is not a Ritalin deficiency. These are conditions that are essentially triggered by malnutrition. And it's not that this is not known among the scientific or medical communities. They know this. But when you go to a doctor's office, it's much faster. If you go into a doctor's office and you complain of these conditions, then it's easier for the doctor to write a prescription, and then out the door you go, and the doctor can see his or her 50 or 60 patients a day. So it's just a quicker fix for everybody involved. Unfortunately, it has some pretty serious side effects, as we've seen recently with Philip Seymour Hoffman, Whitney Houston, Amy Winehouse, and now Robin Williams. These are all cases where people were dependent upon drugs, and the drugs had very serious side effects.
Well, and one of the things we know with depression is a lot of people are saying, I've been taking depression medication for a long time, and it doesn't seem to be effective. That a lot of people don't see the same, that a lot of people don't have. It doesn't work for them. That they take these serotonin uptake inhibitors, and they're like, it actually, after a while, doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it can cause all sorts of devastating side effects, including, and the companies who manufacture these drugs know this, but some of the side effects include homicidal and suicidal thinking. And the rumor that I'm reading about on the internet about Robin Williams is that he had just started taking an antidepressant a few weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, tragically, this happens.
Well, and we know the side effects, especially among younger people, mm-hmm. we have certain side effects on behavioral medication that they take. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, yeah, my child experienced these thoughts or even acted upon these thoughts.
That's right. And it's happening as we see more and more, even in the media these days. And I'm not saying for people to come off their medications, but certainly do your due diligence and research, and then research some more and research some more if you are considering taking any kind of medication today. Unfortunately, what happens in the scientific community is the companies that are selling or marketing the products are the ones who are actually doing their own research. So they cherry pick their data. If they do research that they're not happy with, the data gets brushed under the carpet, so you don't get to find out the negative side effects. And so there's no real accountability going on right now in terms of the devastating side effects of a lot of these types of drugs.
So when we look at mood and food, and oftentimes we like to comfort ourselves with food, there's comfort food. We find food that soothes us, that calms us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, you hear about people, well, I took comfort in the fact I ate so much more. Like, you know, so people are happier, though, but they're eating so much more. So how do we blend the two? How do we say, all right, here's how to be healthy and to eat the right things.
Right. So where fat and sugar are concerned, and by fat, I'm talking about animal fat. Animal fat is actually a good antidote for a sugar addiction. It won't work in everybody every time, but it certainly can help. It really depends on how much damage an individual has done to their biochemistry and to their adrenal glands. And so in some people, the antidote works very, very well. They start eating more animal fat in the diet and the sugar cravings go away. In other people, it might be a more difficult journey because they may have just done that much more damage to their biochemistry. So you can certainly seek out that route, start eating more animal fat. You're going to render many, many benefits from eating more animal fat in the diet. Now, sugar addiction is just one aspect. But generally, when I see people increase their intake of animal fat and they're tolerating the animal fat, they're digesting the animal fat well, their moods start improving, their sleep starts improving, their libido starts improving, and so on and so on. But if you're stuck and the animal fat doesn't seem to be improving your health, then it's really just a sign of really being more persistent. You have to do more things to, for example, stimulate your bile production and bile flow, because when you're eating animal fat and it's not agreeing with you, it's because you're not breaking it down. It's because you've done so much damage to your liver and your gallbladder that bile is not showing up on the scene to help you digest that wonderful fat. So you have to do things like eat raw sauerkraut, sip on lemon water, take some diluted apple cider vinegar before your meals. You have to do things to consciously thin your bile, get your bile going so that you can benefit from the animal fat.
Pam Colleen, always a pleasure to talk to you. Fascinating subject as always, because there is such a connection between how we feel and what we eat, and not just from one meal to the next, but, you know, the long-term chronic impacts of what we put in our body don't just have an effect on our waistline, but most importantly, your brain is the biggest organ in the body it has to feed. Of course, there's going to be an impact on your brain, and we should start thinking about what are the consequences for my brain. We talk about, you know, making sure our kids have the right foods as they develop, but then as an adult, why do we ignore that? Mm-hmm. Why do we think our brain isn't affected by what we eat?
Yeah, it's just a lot of propaganda, unfortunately. We think, you know, we're just going to go to the doctor and get a quick fix. And keep in mind, Tom, that anywhere from 50 to 80% of doctor visits today are for psychological complaints. That's huge, Tom. Here in Ontario, anywhere between 50 and 80% of doctor visits are for psychological complaints, things like fatigue and depression. So this is wearing our medical system down big time, and we've got to do something more tangible to fix it. We can't just use rhetoric. We can't just do, you know, fundraising events that are geared towards putting people on more medications. We've got to look at real nutritional solutions here.
Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Tom.
11:30 is our time. News is next on 1290 CJBK and News Talk 610 CKTV.